an analysis of Jamie's dream in a storm of swords. Written by Janie Tangerine and read by Opal Song. Fandom, A Song of Ice and Fire. Rating, teen. Relationships, Jamie Lannister, Brienne of Tarth. Cersei Lannister, Jamie Lannister. Also tagged for meta, nonfiction, essays, dreams, dreams and nightmares, dream interpretation. Jamie Lannister has issues. Character analysis. Originally posted on Tumblr. Book 3, A Storm of Swords. And Weirwoods. Part 7 of the Janie Tangerine's Jamie Brienne Meta Series. This podfic was created for Annalise O10 for ITPE 2019. Summary. In which I meted and spent a fair amount of words dissecting from the beginning to the end Jamie's dream in A Storm of Swords, based on a question asking why did people think he would live based on it? Disclaimer. Obviously, the quotes provided are all George R.R. Martin's from A Storm of Swords. I copy-pasted the entire thing to go about it with actual text in front of me, but of course, I just own the speculation. First premise. I have good reasons to think that Jamie's Weirwood dream is a perfect depiction slash summary of most of the issues he has. Second premise. It's a Weirwood dream, so it's prophetic. Third premise. I'm going off the basic dream interpretation symbolism, which George R.R. Martin definitely knows a thing or two about dream interpretation and the likes. And the basis is that your dreams are a wish fulfillment that your subconscious is trying to send you, or warnings that your subconscious is trying to send you, but you might censor because you don't want to face what it is your subconscious is really telling you. Which, in this case, we have in spades. So, with that stated, and going at it from the beginning to end, he closed his eyes and hoped to dream of Cersei. The fever dreams were all so vivid. Point one, he hopes to dream of Cersei, i.e. the person he loves, slash, thinks is his other half, slash, soulmate, slash, that he thought of while imprisoned to find himself a motivation to go on, slash, that he associates with love, comfort, being understood, because she's his supposed half, and that's how it goes. Fair enough, he's had a pretty bad time lately, right? Then the dream starts. Naked and alone he stood, surrounded by enemies, with stone walls all around him, pressing close. The rock, he knew. He could feel the immense weight of it above his head. He was home. He was home and whole. Now, what did we say before about conflicting messages? The basic message here is danger, danger, danger! Because he's naked and alone and surrounded by enemies and walls pressing close, which gives a pretty claustrophobic feeling. But he thinks he's home, with an immense weight above his head. Spoilers, his home, Casterly, waits immensely on him, with his name attached to it. But he can't realize that it's a negative thing, because that just doesn't register. He knows that it should be a good thing, so he processes it as such, while his subconscious is screaming danger at him. Also, surrounded by enemies equals pretty much all his life, right? Then, he held his right hand up and flexed his fingers to feel the strength in them. It felt as good as sex, as good as swordplay. Four fingers and a thumb. He had dreamed that he was maimed, but it wasn't so. Relief made him dizzy. My hand, my good hand, nothing could hurt him so long as he was whole. There are more red flags here, as in, he has the right hand, the one he lost before and that he hates to think he's lost. Now, what does he associate it with? Sex and swordplay. Also, he had dreamed he was maimed and nothing could hurt him so long as he was whole. So, his right hand and his swordplay skills are what makes sure he doesn't get hurt. Which is fairly obvious, given that Jamie's basic problem-solving skill when it comes to anything is trying to kill it. And he doesn't have a flight instinct. Also, swordplay equals sex, and sex equals Cersei. So being whole equals he has the right hand, equals he has his swordplay skills, equals he has Cersei, equals he has his love and he can defend himself, equals nothing can hurt him. It's all on the same level. Except that he doesn't have his hand anymore. Not really. But let's go on. Around him stood a dozen tall, dark figures in cowled robes that hid their faces. In their hands were spears. "Who are you?" he demanded of them. "What business do you have in Casterly Rock?" They gave no answer, only prodded him with the points of their spears. He had no choice but to descend. Down a twisting passageway he went, narrow steps carved from the living rock. Down and down. "I must go up," he told himself. "Up, not down. Why am I going down?" Below the earth, his doom awaited. He knew with the certainty of dream. Something dark and terrible lurked there. Something that wanted him. Jamie tried to halt, but their spears prodded him on. "If only I had my sword, nothing could harm me." Now, here we're in downright creepy territory. He's just said that nothing can hurt him. But then he thinks, if only I had a sword, nothing could harm me. So it's not just his right hand now. He needs a sword. He doesn't have one yet. Keep that in mind, because that's half of the point. He's surrounded by dark figures he can't place, who force him to go down instead of up, even if he thinks he should go up, and he knows that his doom awaited below. So he knows he's going straight where something dangerous, dark, and terrible lurks there. Mind the specific word choice. Dangerous, dark, and terrible. So even if he thinks he's whole and safe, he knows deep down that's not a thing. And that he's being forced to face something that wants him. And that's not a good thing either. Which is the same kind of split he shows when he thinks that he's Cersei, but at the same time behaves the opposite way and knows that she'd hate to see him looking differently from her. Also, his doom awaited, which means that he's sure he's going to die and that it'll be his end. And he's really not processing it, because he still thinks that as long as he has the right hand and a sword, he'd be fine. Except, no, that's not the kind of thing you solve by killing it. The steps ended abruptly on echoing darkness. Jamie had the sense of vast space before him. He jerked to a halt, teetering on the edge of nothingness. A spear point jabbed at the small of his back, shoving him into the abyss. He shouted, but the fall was short. He landed on his hands and knees upon the soft sand and shallow water. There were watery caverns deep below Casterly Rock, but this one was strange to him. "What place is this?" "Your place," the voice echoed. It was 100 voices, 1,000, the voices of all the Lannisters since Lon the Clever, who'd lived at the dawn of days. But most of all, it was his father's voice, and beside Lord Tywin stood his sister, pale and beautiful, a torch burning in her hand. Joffrey was there as well, the sun they'd made together, and behind them a dozen more dark shapes with golden hair. And here we go. 1. The dark cloaks and figures are the other Lannisters before him, who, at this point, we can deduce symbolize his name/legacy that he feels he hasn't lived up to, and who are basically bringing him down to a trial as they shove him into the abyss. He ends up someplace he doesn't know or remember. And let's remember that Jaime's preferred coping method for trauma is dissociating. So this is most likely a hint to the fact that he can't recognize a place that his own subconscious is telling him is his place, as in where his trauma/issues are rooted. And who is in this dark, dangerous, terrible place where his doom awaits? Tywin, Cersei, and Joffrey. And more Lannisters, but those three are the ones that are named. Also, Cersei has a burning torch in her hand. So, according to Jaime's subconscious, his father, Cersei and Joffrey, are in the dark, dangerous, and terrible place where his doom awaits. Sounds to me like said subconscious is entirely aware that Tywin was a shit to him, that Cersei never gave a fuck about him, and that he regrets having had Joffrey with her because Joffrey is who he is. But let's go on. Sister, why has father brought us here? Us? This is your place, brother. This is your darkness. Her torch was the only light in the cavern. Her torch was the only light in the world. She turned to go. Stay with me, Jaime pleaded. Don't leave me here alone. But they were leaving. Don't leave me in the dark. Something terrible lived down here. Give me a sword at least. I gave you a sword, Lord Tywin said. It was at his feet. Jaime groped under the water until his hand closed upon the hilt. Nothing can hurt me so long as I have a sword. This is even more damning. First thing, he asks Cersei, why did Tywin bring them here? So he's already putting the blame on him rather than assuming that Cersei has a hand in anything that might hurt him. But Cersei replies that this is his place and his darkness, while holding the only light in the cavern/the world. So if it's his darkness and his place, if she's holding that light, then we can surmise that the light is Jaime himself. And what does Cersei do? She turns and leaves him there. Then he pleads to her to stay with him, and she doesn't. Mind that later the text says that he pleaded with Rhaegar to have someone else guard Aerys with him, and he was told no. And he doesn't want to be left alone in the dark. And he still doesn't realize that the terrible thing that lives down there is in fact all three of them. And at the end, he asks for the sword, which is the only thing that can help him be safe, as we established before, right? So, Tywin gives him the sword, which is obviously foreshadowing Tywin giving him Oathkeeper later. So that's the first prophetic thing that happens. And again, nothing can hurt me as long as I have a sword. At this point, he has the sword and Cersei has the light in her hands, and we establish that he is that light, right? As he raised the sword, a finger of pale flame flickered at the point and crept up along the edge, stopping a hand's breadth from the hilt. The fire took on the color of the steel itself, so it burned with a silvery blue light, and the gloom pulled back. Crouching, listening, Jaime moved in a circle, ready for anything that might come out of the darkness. The water flowed into his boots, ankle deep and bitterly cold. Beware the water, he told himself. There may be creatures living in it, hidden depths. From behind came a great splash. Jaime whirled at the sound, but the faint light revealed only Brienne of Tarth, her hands bound in heavy chains. I swore to keep you safe, the wench said stubbornly. I swore an oath. Naked, she raised her hands to Jaime. Sir, please, if you would be so good. First thing that happens, the moment he takes up the sword becomes a light. So the light that Cersei has in her hands is currently in his own as well. If he is the light, we can definitely deduce the message that if before he thought he was her and she was his other half completely, and now he's starting to take it back from her, even if Cersei still has some with her, which means he's starting to detach himself from her. Also, the moment he does it, the gloom pulls back. As in, the moment he starts to reclaim himself from Cersei, the feeling of doom and gloom momentarily goes away. But he's still on guard, and he's still not really doing too well. There's imagery of his feet being deep in cold water, and he's expecting anything to reach up and drag him down. We can add that the water is a primal element and has a lot of symbolism attached to it. First of all, rebirth and cleansing. But in this case, it's not exactly that. Usually deep water or a large quantity of it means your emotions. And if they're turbulent or cold or not cleansing, it's there to symbolize your emotional turmoil. And if you feel lost in it, it means you can't control your emotions. Except that then there's a splash from behind him as someone erupting from nowhere. And who shows up? Brienne. First, he whirls towards her, but then goes like, oh, it's only her. So she's not perceived as a danger. And then she has chains around her wrists, as in she's forbidden from doing anything that she wants, same as she's been all her life. And Jaime subconsciously knows that. And what does she tell him instead of, well, I gave you a sword, your business, or this is your darkness, not mine? I swore to keep you safe, sir. And then she's naked, as in the bath at Harrenhal, as in at her most vulnerable, same as him. And she's pleading him to let her keep him safe. Now, we already know, he told Qyburn that she's his protector, that by this point, Jaime associates her with being safe slash protected, regardless of how much he might not process it at depth. But she did keep him safe as much as she could. She kept him alive while they were prisoners. She materially cleaned him up, slash made him eat as much as she could when they were prisoners. And they've shared intimate confessions in the bath, at the end of which she caught him, slash washed him, slash dressed him. And wow, who is that that shows up when he feels alone? Naked? His family deserting him and a danger is looming on him? Right. Brienne, who can't do anything until he does something about it, though. And what happens? The steel links part like silk. A sword, Brienne begged. And there it was, a scabbard, belt, and all. She buckled it around her thick waist. The light was so dim that Jaime could scarcely see her, though they stood a few scant feet apart. In this light, she could almost be a beauty, he thought. In this light, she could almost be a knight. Brienne's sword took flame as well, burning silvery blue. The darkness retreated a little more. The flames will burn so long as you stay alive, he heard Cersei call. When they die, so must you. Sister, he shouted, stay with me. There was no reply but the soft sound of retreating footsteps. So, she asks him to let her keep her oath. The moment she does, her chains fall, and she begs for a sword. And in his own subconscious, he conjures one for her from nothing, and gives it to her, same as he'll give her Oathkeeper later. And the moment she puts it around her waist and takes it out, he thinks that she could almost be a beauty slash a knight. And let's remember he's dreaming that both of them are naked. And what happens the moment he gives her the sword? The sword takes flame, so both their swords are burning. What were we saying about what the light stands for here? Right. That it's himself. And what happens? The darkness retreats some more. As in, he gave Brienne a part of himself, or better yet, his subconscious picked her as the person he trusted with that part of himself. Now, Cersei is still there, but he hears her. He doesn't see her. She tells him that the flames will burn as long as you live, and so he must die when they disappear. And he still shouts at her to stay with him, but she doesn't and leaves. Now, at this point, you could say, so we're talking about his own life. But let's remember that this is symbolizing Jamie's worst fears, being abandoned by his family, while at the same time, his own subconscious has placed those three plus his legacy in what damns him and what harms him, and defined him as his darkness that he should try to conquer. But that's not all there is to it, so let's go ahead. Brienne moved her longsword back and forth, watching the silvery flame shift and shimmer. Beneath her feet, a reflection of the burning blade shone on the surface of the flat, black water. She was tall and strong, as he remembered. Yet it seemed to Jaime that she had more of a woman's shape now. Did they keep a bear down here? Brienne was moving, slow and wary, sword to hand. Step, turn, and listen. Each step made a little splash. A cave lion? Dire wolves? Some bear? Tell me, Jaime, what lives here? What lives in the darkness? Doom. No bear, he knew. No lion. Only doom. This dream, Brienne, other than having more of a woman's shape to her, which is already telling concerning what Jaime thinks of her subconsciously, other than asking him if they keep a bear there, second prophecy, since it's obviously about the bear pit, asks if there are dire wolves, the Starks, and cave lions, the Lannisters, and calls him Jaime, not Sir Jaime or Kingslayer. And again, that's Jaime's head, so he wants her to call him like that. Also, he insists that it's not bears or lions, but just doom. And we haven't seen all of that yet. In the cool, silvery blue light of the swords, the big wench looked pale and fierce. I mislike this place. I'm not fond of it myself. Their blades made a little island of light, but all around them stretched a sea of darkness, unending. My feet are wet. We could go back the way they brought us. If you climbed on my shoulders, you'd have no trouble reaching that tunnel mouth. Then I could follow Cersei. He could feel himself growing hard at the thought, and turned away so Brienne would not see. Listen. She put a hand on his shoulder, and he trembled at the sudden touch. She's warm. Something comes. Brienne lifted her sword to point off to his left. There. She looks pale and fierce, more positive attitudes thrown at her, and she says she mislikes this place. And he says that he doesn't like it either. Well, it's his head, so that's obviously also his self-loathing. Their swords are both alight, so she's helping him keep the place not dark. His feet are wet, and remember what we said before about the water. Brienne says that he can climb on her to get out, and he thinks, sure, so I can see Cersei. Gets hard, and doesn't want Brienne to see it. So he doesn't disappoint her? And why? She knows in the real world, and she's in his dream. She won't judge him for it. But he still hides it from her as if he's ashamed of it. A moment later, she touches him, and she's warm, same as in the Harrenhal baths. And she warns him that someone's coming. She's pretty much keeping him safe, as she had sworn. Again, this is all Jaime's subconscious. That's how he sees her at this point. He peered into the gloom until he saw it too. Something was moving through the darkness. He could not quite make it out. A man on a horse. No, two. Two riders, side by side. Down here, beneath the rock? It made no sense. Yet there came two riders on pale horses, men and mounts both armored. The destriers emerged from the blackness at a slow walk. They made no sound, Jaime realized. No splashing, no clink of mail, nor clop of hoof. He remembered Eddard Stark riding the length of Aerys' throne room, wrapped in silence. Only his eyes had spoken. A lord's eyes, cold and gray and full of judgment. "Is it you, Stark?" Jaime called. "Come ahead. I never feared you living. I do not fear you dead." Brienne touched his arm. "There are more." He thinks it's Ned coming, and he goes, "Like, I didn't fear you, either living or dead." But didn't he really? If his judgment hurt him so much that he thinks that's what he'll find in the dark, dangerous, terrible place that's his darkness? Doubtful, Jaime. Doubtful. Notice how Brienne is still touching him and going around him and being supportive. Anyway, he's expecting Ned. He doesn't get Ned. He saw them, too. They were armored all in snow. It seemed to him, and ribbons of mist swirled back from their shoulders. The visors of their helms were closed, but Jaime Lannister did not need to look upon their faces to know them. Five had been his brothers. Oswald Went and Jon Derry. Lewin Martell, a Prince of Dorne. The White Bull, Gerald Hightower. Sir Arthur Dayne, Sword of the Morning. And beside them, crowned in mist and grief with his long hair streaming behind him, rode Rhaegar Targaryen, Prince of Dragonstone and rightful heir to the Iron Throne. "You don't frighten me," he called, turning as they split to either side of him. He did not know which way to face. "I will fight you one by one or all together, but who is here for the wench to duel? She gets cross when you leave her out." "I swore an oath to keep him safe," she said to Rhaegar's shade. "I swore a holy oath." "We all swore oaths," said Sir Arthur Dayne, so sadly. And here we have the jackpot, his doom, along with the Tywin Cersei Joffrey, who left him instead of supporting him through it, is Rhaegar and his Kingsguard. That's because Jaime still feels guilty about it, even if he knows he did the right thing and he couldn't have done much else. Except that his subconscious doesn't really agree on that. So he's facing them slash his doom, and who is with him? Brienne. What does Brienne have? A burning sword that's part of him that he gave freely to her. What does Jaime have? A burning sword that's part of him that he reclaimed directly from Cersei. So, he tells them that they don't frighten him. So, he sees them as enemies. All of them. And he asks them to duel Brienne, too. Because he knows she would, as she swore an oath to keep him safe, as she says for the third time or so later. The fact is that Jaime is so fixated on Brienne's oath to keep him safe, when the entire dream started with him thinking that if he had the right hand, then he didn't need anyone to do it for him. It speaks volumes about how he sees her subconsciously, because most likely no one actually ever swore to keep him safe from anything. He is the one who keeps people safe, slash his loved ones safe, or that he should do that, slash that he feels guilty for not doing. Except that she did, and she keeps on telling that specific oath to every single person that his subconscious sees as dangerous, or that he might need to be protected from. I mean, he's being fairly transparent here, but let's go on to the crux of it. The shades dismounted from their ghostly horses. When they drew their long swords, it made not a sound. "He was going to burn the city," Jaime said. "To leave Robert only ashes." "He was your king," said Derry. "You swore to keep him safe," said Went. "And the children, them as well," said Prince Lewin. Prince Rhaegar burned with a cold light, now white, now red, now dark. "I left my wife and children in your hands." "I never thought he'd hurt them." Jaime's sword was burning less brightly now. "I was with the king." "Killing the king," said Sir Arthur. "Cutting his throat," said Prince Lewin. "The king you had sworn to die for," said the White Bull. The fires that ran along the blade were guttering out, and Jaime remembered what Cersei has said. No! Terror closed a hand around his throat. Then his sword went dark, and only Brienne's burned as the ghosts came rushing in. No! He said. No, no, no! No! Now, the moment Jaime justifies himself for Aerys, both Rhaegar and his cagey brothers start vomiting on him every single thing he has struggled with for his entire life since the king's slaying, and that he couldn't have helped. Now, we as readers know that Jaime was right, that Aerys was dangerous, and that he would never have let Elia and the children die if he had had a clue. And we also know that it was unfair of them all to leave the 17-year-old in charge of the entire castle, slash of the king, slash of Elia and the children. But Jaime's subconscious, which has been struggling with it, his issues with his vows and so on for his entire life, doesn't know that. And what happens? The light in his sword, the one he got from Cersei, in the passing of the torch, starts going dim every time they bring up what turned him into the Kingslayer. It goes dim when Rhaegar accuses him of letting Elia and the children die, and the flames die when his commander reminds him he should have died for Aerys. And wait, why should he have died for Aerys? Because he joined the Kingsguard. Why did he join it? Also because Cersei convinced him to. What light dies completely? The one in his sword that he had been given by Cersei. But not the light in Brienne's sword, which is the light he gave to her freely. And then he wakes up, and what does he do? Goes back to Harrenhal to go get Brienne. Now, that dream is symbolism for a lot of things, including a metaphorical death. For Jaime as the Kingslayer, for Jaime's issues, for Jaime's tendency to not deal with his own trauma. Not for himself, because Brienne's sword is still burning in his darkness, and that's his light as well. It wasn't just the one that went out. What happened metaphorically is that Cersei rejected him wholly and washed her hands of him, as she will do later. He reclaimed himself back, King Slayer and all, and then he gave Brienne some of the light Cersei had, which still stands for himself. And the one he had in his arms that died when he confronted his kingslaying slash his trauma connected to his experience in the Kingsguard that he always refused to deal with. What he did metaphorically is that he took himself back from Cersei, gave Brienne the best part of him to keep safe, and suffered while he had to deal with the fact that he never really got over Aerys as he wishes he had. But that means that when he gets over it fully, and he's on the good road for it, as since he wakes up from the dream, other than saving Brienne, he vows to try to be the person he wants to be, owns up to his shit, starts detaching himself from Cersei, and deals with his problems. And if you compare his A Storm of Swords POVs with his A Dance with Dragons ones, you can see that his emotional maturity, which was about stuck at his late teens when his POVs start, has taken a huge damn leap forward. Then he'll have to kill slash shed his Kingslayer persona and probably his Kingsguard duties. Not that he's going to die. Because the light in Brienne's sword never went out, and that was his light too. And he gave it to her subconsciously in a prophetic dream in which he left behind all the toxic parts of his family, or they left him behind as well, and had to be without them. Mind that neither Tyrion nor Tommen or Marcella appear in the dream at all, and faced his darkness and doom with Brienne at his side, and she kept the sword with his light burning. Which means he's definitely going to live. Or at least he's going to outlive Cersei and die on his own damn terms. But I really think that the dream is about him confronting his trauma and the Kingslayer persona he never really wanted, not about his death. Because it says nowhere he will die. Never mind that the person who says it is Cersei, and his entire storyline is about him distancing himself from her and realizing that she's completely wrong about the two of them, and that he doesn't want the same things as she does, and vice versa. The end. If you enjoyed this podfic, please leave feedback, both for myself and for the author. You can find this podfic at archiveofourown.org/users/Opalsong. Thanks for listening!